Football Weekly with James Richardson in association with sportingbet.com.
Football Weekly, like Van Gogh's present to his girlfriend, it's the end of the year. And today's Football Weekly celebrates in style with, in this, the final podcast of 2009, a lovingly compiled look back at all the very best bits from the final podcast of 2009. Gasp as we round up all the festive action in the Premier League, the only one that bothers playing at this time of year. Goggle as we ask whether it's now really a four-horse race, and glow as we salute you, the listener, and your picks for the best of 2009. All of that in today's Football Weekly. Hello, everybody. Well, historic in so many ways. A podcast today, and we're delighted to have with us for it Barry Glendening.
Hello.
Hi, Barry. Raphael Honigstein.
Hello.
Hi, Raphael.
Hi.
And Fernando Duachi.
Hello.
Hi, Fernando. Barry's done no prep and very little revision for today's special decade-ending.
Unusual.
Yeah. I was just wondering, could you explain, Raphael, to Barry what has happened over the last 7 days?
Ooh, quite a few games.
Yeah.
What a significance. Where should I start?
What of significance? Let's start with a four-horse race.
Yeah, what four-horse race?
Well, exactly.
For what?
For the title?
No,
for the title.
Only,
Well, for a start, you've got Chelsea up there at the top.
Yeah.
You've got Man United not far behind.
Yeah. I'll give you Arsenal.
Arsenal, who were 11 behind not long ago, not sure how long ago. They've roared back into this. Part of that has been that big win over Aston Villa. Fernando, you were there. Did they look like title contenders again?
Arsenal?
Yeah.
If they have players, yeah. Because without Fabregas and Van Persie, I don't think they can do it. They were pretty mediocre against a much more mediocre side, Aston Villa. And that lock was only broken because Fabregas hit a fantastic free kick and then hell broke loose. I don't really think they have a chance unless they bring people in and they keep their players fit. But apparently Van Persie is out for, 6 months now? Mm. So that could be a problem.
Fabregas has twanged his hamstring again, I think.
So right after the second goal, by the way.
So that was the gamble that Wenger had. And did he say that he felt it was worth it for the goals?
Well, he said in a press conference afterwards that you'll never know, because they might have won the game without Fabregas, or you might have not. It's impossible to prove either way. But he said he would do it again based on the information he had, i.e. he needed to bring somebody on to change something, to bring a bit more creativity and quality to the side. And Fabregas was, on paper, fit enough to play. So if they find out that he'll be missed for three weeks, I still think it was a gamble worth taking because, of course, Villa was almost a six-pointer for Arsenal. They need to win this game, I think. Not so much with view of winning the championship, although Wenger would disagree, but really to secure that fourth spot or third spot as they're in right now.
Mm. And they're taking on Liverpool later on today. You described them as looking pretty horrible at Villa later on.
Yeah, but then Liverpool are also looking pretty horrible the way they played against, I think, Wolves, right?
Wolves, yeah.
This weekend. What was that game? I mean, literally, when you use a famous expression, that Gerrard got the game by the neck, or what's
scruff of the neck.
It's true, because they couldn't go past that team. It took them the red card to actually start fretting. Before that, Wolves were actually bringing a game to them. It didn't look like what is supposed to be in the big schemes of the Premier or the Premiership, you know, things. And I was pretty shocked.
Yeah, I don't think Villa were that bad, and I don't think we can really judge them on their performance alone. I think the problem is, which is something that we've talked about before here in this pod, is that they're very, very direct, and as a consequence, they don't have a lot of possession, and against a team who keep the ball very well, they end up running and running and running and get really tired in the second half. And the second half of the season, that's exactly what happened to them. And it could happen again, I think, because they just play this unbelievably high-intensity, retro-British style of football.
So their style of play basically leaves them knackered for the second half of the season?
Well, that was the evidence the last couple of years.
No,
and it was
sense.
The evidence on Sunday when they really gave it away in the second half of the season. Because before that, they contained Arsenal pretty well.
Because when they try to replace pieces, for example, okay, you can take Heskey off and bring Carew in, but that's it. I don't think they can replace guys like the Young and Abgon Lahore. You know, it seems that they haven't got the squad depthness to play the way Rafa is saying, that they need to find something else.
I think it's by design. I mean, I think Martin only likes that kind of style, and it does bring you success, even against the bigger sides. I mean, they've beaten all the top for sides apart from Arsenal this season. The problem is, I think, more to do it on an everyday basis, because it's hard to grind out results playing such a high tempo and such a direct game, because you will get knackered.
All right, well, what about Arsenal then? As I say, they were 11 points behind. They could be 1 point behind Chelsea if they win both of their games in hand, away to Portsmouth and at home to Bolton, is that right?
Yeah, but the way things are so unpredictable these days, I'm loving this season, because you get some crazy results. It's a shame that because of the baby, I cannot bet anymore. I promise I wouldn't bet. Because
really?
Yeah, can you imagine the odds for Fulham 3, Man United 0?
You've got a child on the way.
Yeah. Baby Cecilia's coming.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
okay.
In March, yeah.
And this has affected your betting, which is a shame, as you say. But it's a good season for bettors and not bettors alike.
If you like to see crazy results, I think that's great. I mean, right. For a neutral point of view, of course, by supporting Liverpool, I'm pretty annoyed with this season. But
I think Bolton home and away, which they're effectively playing Arsenal after the Portsmouth game, is going to be a real test for them, because I'm still not convinced the squad as it is right now, unless they bring somebody in, or maybe two. Wenger was even talking about bringing a midfielder possibly after the game.
Who's he going to bring in, Rafael? You're usually in the loop.
No, I'm not in the loop as far as Arsene Wenger's concerned.
No,
he just he beats me when it comes to signing players. No, I really don't know. And I'm not sure he does, because he afterwards in the press conference said if anyone had any names, they should give him a call to the journalists. And there weren't many takers. But the point I wanted to make is that, in order to win a championship, you need to get results at places like Bolton, or at home to Bolton, or even away to Portsmouth. And I'm not sure, with Arshavin leading the line, or even Eduardo, who was pretty poor, I must say, that they have got the right setup. Abu Dhabi's been playing fantastically well, and he gives them a bit of strength and a bit of presence, physical presence. But without him, they've got very, very little in that department. And I just don't see them going all the way at the moment, unless, as I said, they bring in a couple of really decent big players.
You were saying earlier that the league was a four-horse race. I would venture to say it's a six-horse race.
Crikey.
And I can reach in and rummage around my big box of stats and pull out a stat that proves it. Because on this day in 1997, Arsenal were in sixth place in the league, and they were 12 points off the pace and went on to win it. At the moment, Manchester City are in sixth place in the league, and they're only 10 points off the They've won two in a row, and they've kept two clean sheets.
10 points behind with one game in hand under Roberto Mancini, Il Mancio. They have had two victories out of two, scored 5 goals, and conceded none. And Roberto now saying, well, we'd win the title. Of course, if all you'd faced so far had been Stoke and Wolves, you might think.
Yeah, but who's the fourth horse? Do you really think Tottenham can win the title?
I think Barry, who was making this contention, was suggesting that Man City, as indeed Mancini himself reckons, could be in with a shout.
To be honest, in my six-horse race, Tottenham and Aston Villa will be the two rags being scrubbed along at the back, a distance behind.
But strictly pony, I think. Yeah.
I don't think Man City can do it. I would have agreed if they'd drawn just a few games less and put themselves in a position where they can really challenge Chelsea and Man United. They're just a bit too far off, and I can't see them just going on a run and winning 10 games in a row, which is sort of result that you would need if you wanted to replicate what Arsenal did in 1997-98.
But the thing is, they have just won two in a row, and they've a very easy run of fixtures coming up, so I think they could easily string together 7 or 8.
They're not playing the knockout stages of the Champions League, which is something that also helps. However, they lose players to the African Cup of Nations, isn't it? But in terms of playing, facing everything in two fronts, they have this advantage. So perhaps if they get a couple of games, they might scare. But I still agree with Rafa. I don't see them doing that. That would be a good bet, by the way.
Dirk, interesting post here. He says, doesn't the appointment of Mancini show how faddy football chairmen are in England and how they follow trends? Well, that's faddy. When Wenger was successful with Arsenal, other Premier League clubs started appointing French coaches like Ulliez, Santini, Perrin and Tiguana. Then Liverpool had success with Benitez, so other clubs followed with Spanish coaches like Ramos and Martinez. Capello had success with England, so now Italian coaches are on vogue. He says, no wonder they never give black managers a chance. I think the only reason so many Scottish coaches work in England is because chairmen think any Scotsman could turn out to be the next Fergie. Interesting
Apart from when the French, when a black manager happens to be French, he does get a chance.
Right.
But I think there's definitely something in it. I mean, there's always the herd instinct in football, and it comes to players as well. I think, you know, you see a few players doing well from a particular league, and all of a sudden the
Russia,
scouts,
of course, very much involved.
Well, the scouts say, you know, you see how well he's done. I've got now. I've got the next Pavlyuchenko. I've got the next Arshavin for you, etc. But I think Italian coaches have for a long time had the only disadvantage with English, and now I think with a new generation of former players coming through who are much more willing to adapt to a foreign environment and to broaden their horizons, etc. They've even overcome that that disadvantage, and that's why I think we'll see more of them. The question is, will the Italian trend continue beyond 2010, beyond the quarterfinal exit in 2010, and beyond West Ham possibly getting relegated? Because I was at the Spurs game, and I must say they looked absolutely hopeless.
Really?
And Zola, poor Zola, was shouting porca miseria and all kinds of stuff on the bench.
Right.
It doesn't strike me as the right man to sort of flick a switch and now scramble and scrap for points in a relegation battle. I still think he likes players and he likes football the way he played himself, and he wants to replicate and reproduce that kind of football. And they're not going to get anywhere with the players that they've got. So I really think that West Ham look terrible, in terrible shape right now.
If that boat was sinking, I think Scott Parker would be the only player worth saving, because he's been remarkable, in my opinion. He's born again.
Yeah, but he went off injured on 10 minutes, and he might be out for 3 weeks. So it's really desperate times for them.
Right. I mean, Diamante's been quite flashy, but
he's exactly flashy. Yeah. Well, Muto, I don't know where that story comes from, but why would a guy from Fiorentina, who's playing in the Champions League, go to a relegation threatened West Ham?
Fiorentina, I don't think, are looking to keep him on. I think they feel that they have that it's time to.
Yeah, but West Ham are broke. They might have to sell their best players.
And Mutu's fairly broke as well. He could probably do with the signing on fee.
Indeed. Sorry, yes.
I don't know. It sounds a bit like that Luca Toni to West Ham story to me, where there was somebody saying, I'm his agent. He wasn't even his agent trying to make a move happen.
Luke
that was never on the cards.
He wants to go to Roma,
the Eternal City.
Yeah.
Apparently it's a done deal.
I mean, it's interesting what's going to happen, because, as you know, he's on nearly 2.5 million euros net for 6 months of the season, so 5 million over a whole term. And Roma have said, well, we'll pay that until the end of the season, but what's going to happen afterwards? Are they really going to pay him 5 million euros net? Difficult to see. He'll have to take a huge pay cut if he wants to continue in Serie A.
All right, well, listen, two final points then on the Christmas action. Chelsea beat Fulham. Does that mean their slump is over? Were Fulham just unlucky?
I don't think so. Chelsea's slump is over, because their performance at the back was horrific, and they were lucky to win 2-1.
Nobody trusts anybody in that team. You see, all the time they seem to think that the other one is going to screw up. So you have some comical situations like Cech almost hitting John Terry all
John
the time.
John Terry giving the opposing centre forwards a guided tour of the back line.
I still, it pains me to say this, but I think a lot of it starts with Cech and his reluctance to come off the line. At the beginning of the season, there were people at Chelsea saying, you know, maybe time for a change. And then he played quite well. But now, over the last few games, I think that vulnerability or a bit of hesitancy has crept back into his game.
You think it's
and
still
Chelsea
the
are suffering?
Is it still the John Hunt incident?
Do you think Stephen Hunt?
Do you think it's still that the incident? Because I have the opinion that he's never been the same after that.
He had a long spell out of the game, came back with a fractured skull. That could well have an impact.
Even in, for the Czech Republic, when he basically gave the game away.
You're in 2008. Yeah, horrific. No, very true, very true. I said 2 points. The other one was Birmingham, who, as you will have read, no doubt, are currently on their best form in 100 years. Why?
I just think they've a really good defence. They're not conceding goals. Joe Hart is making a very strong case for
England,
being England's number one. I can't think of a better English goalkeeper, or anyone who's even close to being as good as he is at the moment. He had an inspired game yesterday. And made some fantastic saves. He seems to command his penalty area as well, just what England need. And I'd be astonished if he didn't get picked in the squad, and I think he should be in the team.
they were playing Stoke.
Stoke against Stoke, yeah. Right. Yeah. Good. They played Everton before that, did they not?
No, they played Chelsea. 0-0.
Yeah.
But there was this great moment when Lampard had this fantastic chance against Birmingham. Mm-hmm. It looked offside, but he wasn't. A half volley, and Hart made this fantastic save. And there was this... Lampard must have said something. The cameras didn't pick it up, but Joe Hart's answer was F off. So there must have been this conversation where Lampard must have said something like, "You Jemmy so-and-so, how could you save this shot?" Mm. Because it was a really fantastic save. One of the saves of the decades, maybe.
We could only speculate.
The F off was clear. I saw that on Match of the Day. Right. There was clearly some banter there. It's good. That's what football is about. Come on.
Certainly is. Yeah. Certainly is. Now, it's not what Football Weekly is about, though. So we want none of that kind of talk in here, thanks. That's it for part one. In part two, we're going to start having a look back on the crazy events of the last 12 months in the world's favourite game.
Football Weekly from The Guardian, in association with SportingBet.com.
Part two, then, listeners. What a year it's been. 12 months in which Alan Shearer flopped as the Messiah. Didier Drogba flipped in flip-flops when football got interrupted by everything from tic-tacs to the quest for the perfect poached egg, and when goals went in off the unlikeliest things. Beach balls, Thierry Henry's hand, bits of Emil Heskey. There was Sven and Sol in the Notts County Farrago. There was a Michael Owen catalogue brochure. Argentina's collapse and rain-soaked redemption, Shawshank style, with Peru. And Ireland's plucky 33rd team World Cup bid. Which bits stood out for you? Well, Sean Ingle did request people to post in with their goals of the year, matches of the year, moments of the year, and of course what Shawnee wants, Shawnee gets. So let's have a quick look through one or two.
Did Shawnee have like betting odds of the year, Paddy Power payout of the year, betting shop cashier of the year, betting shop cashier rear of the year.
What was your betting coup of the year, Barry? You've had some notable successes.
My betting coup of the year, well, it was more my mate Joey Hayden, who's a keen student of the form. He recommended to me a few weeks ago, we were out just having a couple of quiet pints on a Friday, and Joey recommended Palermo, who were playing Milan, Aston Villa double. Villa were playing Manchester United, and it paid 64-1.
Good Lord.
I had a few quid on that.
Crikey.
Mm. But no, that was entirely down to Joey, not me.
Right,
he did the legwork. And the thing is, when he suggested it to me, he...
Can I have his phone number, please?
When he suggested it to me, I laughed at him, but then he made a very good case for both sides.
And, right. Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, listen, let's have a look at one or two of the choice moments as picked by you, the listener. Matches where Chelsea... lots of matches involving Chelsea and Liverpool, the Champions League ones. The Chelsea-Barcelona game, plenty of people posting that in. Oh, the Manchester derby at the start of the season, the 4-3. The 5-5 Marseille-Lyon game, one or two continental sophisticates suggested that. Spurs' 9-1 trouncing Wigan. Barry, sorry.
There was a contender for match of the year yesterday in the Championship. Mm. High-flying Cardiff, who appear to get a nosebleed every time they get come within a sniff of promotion to the Premier League, went 4-0 up against bottom-of-the-table Peterborough. 4-0 up at half time, and Peterborough came back and scored two goals and then got two in injury time to draw 4-4.
Wow.
Prompting Cardiff manager Dave Jones to announce that, you know, the staff work hard, I work hard, and then these 11 idiots go out and let us all down.
Producer Ben's nodding sympathetically.
Arsenal 4-4 Liverpool?
Yep.
Brazil 3. United States 2 in the Confederations Cup.
Yeah,
that was a terrific game.
Yeah.
I almost had a heart attack.
Well, I'm sure you did. Are you confident about Brazil for the World Cup, Fernando?
Yes and no. But, right. You know, every year, every World Cup, we got to fancy ourselves to get close to the title. We got the players to actually dream about it. It's not a vintage Brazilian side that's been knocking about it a couple of times before and people have been slagging me off. I don't think it's like 2002, for example. So it will be like this by the scruff of the neck, I think so.
Is there one element of the team that worries you?
Yeah, that we haven't got enough creativity. I think if Kaká gets injured, we are doomed. Hmm. We need perhaps Ronaldinho to start playing better and being back into the equation.
Or Diego as well, no?
Yeah, but I don't think Diego will fit into the way Dunga wants the team to play. And yeah. I think there's also a problem of personal differences there. I don't know. Dunga doesn't like one of the players moans about being sitting on the bench, which is why Marcelo has yet to have they've got another game. And another thing is Argentina are very unfancied. That always worries me, because when they arrive like this on the shadows, they tend to spring. And they got enough players to actually cause anybody some kind of upset. Having said that, if they remain with Maradona as a coach, they will be like a toothless lion on cider.
You're always one for the cliches, aren't you, Fernando? Now, that's fascinating. A couple of other games people mentioned. Liverpool's 4-1 win at Old Trafford last season. And, of course, Barcelona's 6-2 rout of Real Madrid. Goals, Barry, I'm sure you'll agree with those posting in, that Iniesta's against Chelsea in the semi-final Champions League last season. One of the most memorable goals of the year.
He said, I put my heart and soul into that shot.
Oh, how lovely.
Yeah, it was great.
He has that kind of face that you can believe him, no? He's a very sincere.
Well, I think he has some sort of skin pigmentation problem that maybe adds to his air of sincerity. I've done a bit on video, I think, already. Uh-huh. That said the Chelsea-Barcelona
just one. If somebody would have told you that Messi would score with a header against Vidic and Ferdinand in a Champions League final, you would have said... No,
indeed you would, and especially if you were Raphael Honigstein, yes, predicting a 4-5-0.
Well, I can only repeat that I got the analysis right. Unfortunately, Ferguson got his tactics wrong, so he should have listened.
Blunt Guardian says goal of the year, Graffiti. Humiliating Bayern Munich. Just describe it for anyone.
It's basically a guy going past eight players and then going past three of them again, just to rub it in, and then...
Back-heeling, and
then because he didn't hit it very heavily, the ball sort of goes in slow motion. You can still see the goalkeeper and two Bayern Munich defenders sort of scrambling together. They just can't get there. It's a great goal. And it was really the goal that I think not only in the minds of the Wolfsburg players, but also the rest of German football, the public, sort of signaled their arrival, and they were going to win the championship that year, and that was the goal that really stood for that.
Took the clothes of the emperor, perhaps. Yeah.
Graffiti's partner, Dzeko, it's January soon. Where are the rumours going to be connecting him with?
Well, the Arsenal rumour is a pretty strong one.
Right.
I think it's a problem of valuation because Milan had a bid.
He wants to go to Milan.
He wants to go to Milan. He'd agreed personal terms with him. Milan had a €20 million offer rejected by Wolfsburg.
Wow.
I think there's a clause in his contract for a similar sum, maybe as high as €25 million, which is, even though he's only 23, quite a lot of money for the likes of Wenger to spend. Would be almost out of character for him to spend that much. So I think the valuation might be a problem, and January is not a good time to do business in Germany. The clubs are very, very reluctant to let players go, and Wolfsburg are still not sure that they will be in Europe next year, so they can't really afford to lose them, and they have Volkswagen behind them, and I think it's about face and public relations, etc., so I don't think they'll let them go.
All right, fair enough. Couple more goals. One that I'm indebted to whoever posted this in. A fantastic goal from the Italian third division, Giuseppe Cozzolino. It's worth looking this one up, isn't it, Barry? I showed this to you.
Oh, yeah, it's beautiful.
Giuseppe Cozzolino. If you look up on YouTube, Como versus Lecco, and Cozzolino is Cozzolino. It's a terrific one. Perhaps producer Ben will post it up at the top. Who knows? Dragan Stojkovic. Yeah, Beppe Signori posting in. Not the Beppe Signori, or if it is, hello, Beppe. He says, game of the year, Real Madrid 2, Barcelona 6. And goal of the year, the extraordinary first-time volley from way past the halfway mark.
That was remarkable.
Fernando, describe it for us.
The manager was, Stojkovic, was actually, doing his job in a J League game, and the ball was kicked out of bounds, and immediately he hit his first.
He leapt off the. He was sitting in the dugout.
Yeah, he leapt off the. I think he was standing. From what I remember, he was kind of prancing around. He saw the ball coming and hit his first time straight into the net, and he was sent off for that. But boy, wasn't it worthy?
It certainly was.
I want to again about Serbians. Dejan Petkovic and. National champion Flamengo, he scored like 3 or 4 Olympic goals this season, so we'd like to include this for the whole,
Petkovic.
Yeah, yeah, he scored a couple of, he was amazing taking free corner kicks
right.
this season, so
See, there can't be many Serbians in the Brazilian...
No, he's the only one.
The only one, right. Okay, interesting. Interesting. Now, lots of contributions for the moment of the... Of the year in podcasting and indeed football terms. Loads of people at the time we tried to call you Rafa and got a wrong number. That was terrific. Simon Hattinson.
It was a tremendous year.
It was a tremendous year. And
did it really happen? Seriously?
Oh yeah. It was fantastic. It was probably the best ever phone-in we've had.
Were you here in Germany?
Yeah. We never found out, I don't think. Somebody posting in about, on a serious note, our long discussion about something. I think it was the one we were discussing about whether it's ethically fair for people to change their allegiances as clubs. And lots of other things, including the alphabet dating, is it called a meme? Or a kind of ongoing, yeah, it's called a meme. But I think it's all trumped by producer Ben's triumphant post in the last show's thing of the Football Weekly team dancing Chippendales style, and if he can only post that again at the top of this one, we'll all be happy people. If you haven't seen it, Raphael, you should. You really, really should. You're in it, actually. Yeah. Best post, my nomination for post of the year, the Tintin analogy with Jimbo as Dr. Mueller, Sid as Tintin, and Barry as Captain Haddock. Wooderson suggests Barry's reply to Van der Vaart next, who was saying in the height of the Tiger Woods scandal, he's up to 9 holes, will he get the full 18? Barry replies, I already make it 18 if you include the back 9. And, of course, Roger Palmer mentioning Matt Scott's triumphant slam on Knight Rider, who said, I've never heard anyone, this was Knight Rider's post, I've never heard anyone as smug and self-important than Matt Scott. And Matt Scott posted, it's as Matt Scott, as Matt Scott. Delicious. Right, is that it for part two? I believe it is. Part three, we look ahead to 2010.
Is part three going to be a self-indulgent and sort of an orgy of mutual backslapping?
I do hope so.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Part three, as 2010 hoves into view, the transfer market is about to unleash all manner of rumour and speculation. What are going to be the juicy stories, do you think, Barry?
Well, there was a juicy story this morning linking Peter Crouch, Rubino and Joe with moves to Russia.
Oh, I was going to say, did it involve an industrial warehouse outside?
No.
No, right. Right.
If Rubino was unhappy in Manchester, can you imagine him in Moscow or some other city? Never going to happen. I mean, I think he's going to run away and go AWOL if that happens. I mean, if he was... If he was sold.
Right, and if he plays in gloves in Manchester in August, what's he going to play in? Yes.
But his performance actually against, I think it was Stoke on Boxing Day, was, again, shameful, pulling out of tackles and...
It's not really what he was bought for, though, was it?
Yeah, well, still.
Winning crunching tackles against Stoke.
Yeah. It's a shame because he's built for it.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
But anyway, Harry Redknapp has also said that he's no plans to do any wheeling or dealing.
Oh.
But I would imagine he'll start shivering and sweating after about the window's been open for 4 hours, and he'll definitely get someone in.
He would like to sell Pavlyuchenko. I think he's gone on the record. There's just probably not many takers. Kershakov is also another Russian striker who's very much being shopped around Europe at the moment. He's been linked with a couple of German clubs. I think there's a few... Premier League clubs also still looking at Kevin Kurani, who's very much available and in fairly decent form, I'm surprised to report. From a German perspective, there is a couple of things perhaps that are interesting to our predominantly UK audience. Balak has all but signed a new two-year deal at Chelsea. That's going to be announced pretty soon. And also, they are very much in talks with both Aguero and Martin Hamsik.
Who are? Chelsea?
Chelsea, yes.
Marek Hamsik?
Yes.
Of Napoli?
Marek Hamsik, yes.
Oh, okay.
Did I say Martin?
Yeah, but that's Marek. All right.
Yeah, he's somebody that Ancelotti really loves.
Right.
From what I've heard. And Christian Gross at Stuttgart likes young boys. Boys burn. There's this very, very good Ivorian player who's not going to the African Nations Cup, even though he's really good. Seydou Doumbia, he's called, and he's excellent. And I think he will be in the Bundesliga very, very soon.
Terrific. Peter Crouch, is he going to Russia? Did you mention that, Barry?
Yeah. Oh. Well, I would doubt it, but there was a rumour linking him with Zenit St. Petersburg.
You're saying it's just a tall story?
Yeah. They've become aware of his good touch. But they apparently... They're,
it's not that good, actually.
It's, what's his name, Luciano...
Spalletti.
Spalletti is in the big cheese there. So, yes. And he's going to offer to double his wages. So, I mean, I'd go for a year anyway. Just, why not?
All right, Luciano, if you're listening.
Yeah.
Harry would go for a year. In a World Cup, yeah. Now, Brazil, Curitiba. We mentioned these shocking scenes the final day of the Brazilian season, and they got relegated, and fans went crazy, etc., etc., etc.
Incited by the club, by the way, who decided.
Incited by the club.
The club said, yeah, let's create a green hell to Fluminense. There's been this despicable thing in the south of Brazil that there would be a conspiracy to help the Rio de Janeiro clubs and kind of like, you know, undermine Curitiba. That was kind of ventilated by the club, through the media. Mm-hmm. Basically, they inflated the temples of everybody, and that thing happening.
They ripped up the wind, and they rode the tempest, or they cooled down the thunder, and now they're reaping the storm.
No, what I'm saying is that all that savage situation took place in a country that's going to host the next World Cup, I mean, mm-hmm. in 2014. So the authorities needed to stamp down, to clamp down that, and they did. Curitiba has got like a 30-game ban, home matches, and also had to pay like the equivalent of £200,000 for all the wild scenes that happened there. And I think that's fantastic.
That's pretty much all the next season at home. They won't be playing their second division.
Yeah, they won't be playing at home. They're going to have to find other arrangements. And I once said here, it's important that this kind of attitude is taken by the authorities, so we don't have the heisels and the things that you guys had to have here before you fix up the stadium situation. It's ridiculous. If we're going to host this World Cup, and I think we're going to do a great job, we need to start showing some kind of resolve.
Okay, excellent. Fascinating, Fernando. Goran Pandev is one person we haven't mentioned. The Italian press reckon that he's already done a deal with Inter. He's now been released by an Italian sporting court from his contract with Lazio.
On what basis?
On the basis that they were being unfair to him. Wow, this is kind of technical. But they had excluded him from the squad and were doing what the Italians call mobbing, basically sidelining him and preventing him from either plying his trade or making transfers, and pricing him out of a deal. He told them he wanted to move away, and he says that basically Lazio just asked for ridiculous sums of money and as a result almost imprisoned him. And Lazio's reaction when the whole thing went to court was to nominate people for the kind of president of the deciding council, who were plainly who were things like Lazio directors. So the case was always being delayed while they found new people, and eventually they got it decided. And he's now free to go. And as I say, in Italy they're saying that he is going to be joining Inter. Although there are all sorts of other moves as well. Mourinho, of course, would be the man who'd be taking him on board there. And again, it does look like Mourinho's tenure in Italy will be coming to an end at the end of this season.
I would love it, love it, love it to come back to England, he said, after visiting.
They asked him, has your love affair
Chelsea
ended
Fulham
with
game?
Italy? They said, has your love affair ended with Italy? He said it never began.
On the subject of transfer speculation and news in foreign media, in the absence of Sid Lowe, I'll just say, hang on a minute, rubbish. Today being Tuesday, today's edition of Marca has reported that Real Madrid have set their beady eyes on Nemanja Vidic, and they want to sign him before the end of the year. And they've also reported that Fergie is resigned to losing him and wants to get Bruno Alves in from Porto instead.
Interesting.
Well, the same. Also, I think Cristiano Ronaldo publicly went on the record saying Wayne Rooney would be his preferred partner up front, and Florentino Perez named him as one of three targets for next season.
Wow, that would be an interesting transfer.
Just imagine Colleen in El Corte Inglés shopping the whole capital. That would be great. His wages would be well spent, apparently.
Now, on the rather more immediate frontier, we have the FA Cup third round, the big round, the round where it all gets interesting. Hey, Barry Glendening, and what are the ties that are catching your eye in this group of matches here?
Well, you've sprung this on me because you haven't really. I just forgot we were going to be talking about it.
How about that Leeds?
Well, there's Leeds Manchester United, but I remember watching the draw and all the good teams in the Premier League have home ties.
Right.
And then Liverpool are away to Reading.
Right. Okay, what would happen? You know, what would happen if they got knocked out? And is that a realistic possibility?
I think even Liverpool will be able to beat Reading, who are pretty poor, not doing so well this season. But if they got knocked out...
They just got their bottoms handed to them by Plymouth.
Yeah, and they're 20th in the table.
Ow.
So,
okay.
Yeah, Liverpool should be able to manage them. But you never know.
All right. Middlesbrough will be taking on Man City. Be interesting to see if they can manage another 8-1. Chelsea are playing Watford, Man United, Leeds. Leeds, of course, end of the decade. Have to make the token reference to the fact they started the decade on top of the Premier League.
Yes, how the mighty have gone. I mean, if that game was at Elland Road, you'd give them a chance because right. Ferguson will probably put out an under-strength team. But, you know, either way, they'll all get to sing songs about airplanes and whatnot. I'm sure it'll be a lovely atmosphere. Romance of the Cup and all that.
The question is, will the FA Cup suffer because of the competitiveness of the Premier League? There's going to be more teams than ever before thinking, you know what, we can actually get into the Champions League. Let's give this other one here a miss and treat it a bit disdainfully. That's what I'm wondering about.
When even Wolves are resting players now for crucial Premiership matches, I think this is quite of... more than a possibility, Rafa.
Okay. Teams like Man City or Liverpool, who might otherwise be prioritising this in the absence of, you know, European targets, might be otherwise
occupied. Liverpool can still win
the Europa League.
The Europa League.
That's very true.
And I think Man City is also a different case. Remember how seriously Mourinho took the League Cup in his first couple of years because he wanted to win things at all costs. And he also felt that winning something, even though it was the League Cup, would then give the players the confidence and the sort of mental mindset to win other things. And I think Mancini will take a similar view and very much try to win the FA Cup. So I think he's might be the exception, or City might be exception. But even I think the likes of Birmingham, Villa, Spurs, Arsenal, of course, always look at the FA Cup with a bit, you know, do we really have to do this? And even Chelsea will wonder about this one.
For City, it's also important because I think they haven't won a relevant trophy since 1976, the League Cup, wasn't it?
It was, Fernando. I think we can confirm that. It was. They haven't won anything since. Shocking.
And under Rafael's perspective of actually a trophy meaning so much for a team, and when you see like guys like John Terry and Frank Lampard jumping around with the Community Shield, that totally endorses what he said. And I think for City it would be fantastic, especially under this revolutionary Emirati regime.
Okay, a couple of other fixtures. Nottingham Forest, who are third in the Championship, unbeaten in the last 15 games, are hosting the similarly informed Birmingham. Barry, your Sunderland...
Something's got to give there.
Hey, that's for sure. And your Sunderland are at home to Barrow. Rafael Honigstein, you're a big fan of Darren Bent.
Well, I wasn't a big fan when Spurs bought him for £60 million. I thought it was ridiculous. But now I think Sunderland have done fantastic business. £10 million quid. He was really unwanted. Spurs were desperate to offload him, and they got a good deal. And he scored 13 goals in 13 games. You can't argue with that.
Nope. Been offside more than any other player in the Premier League as well.
No, but it doesn't matter because that's his game, and you only need one onside action to score. So
maybe his game is suited for this kind of team, because at Tottenham he was like the biggest wastage of money I've ever seen in my life. You know, I mean, it was just outrageous.
One other little thing I just noticed in this morning's Gazetta, looking forward to, you know, the future of football and all that, is Platini. Has begun to make noises about video technology. Pierluigi Collina, probably the most respected refereeing figure of the past couple of decades, I would say, has come out and said all over the Gazzetta dello Sport today, I think video technology should be introduced. FIFA can't say that it would kill traditional refereeing because it's already been killed by the use of replays on television. It's ridiculous that the entire world sees what really goes on apart from the one man who has to make the decision. And I just wonder if it could be significant, a voice that well-respected and lending its weight to this campaign.
I think what FIFA will do is what they did before in 2006 and what they did at the African Cup of Nations is there will be a monitor for the fourth official, or the fourth official will be on the blower to somebody who's actually watching the game. And if there is a really problematic big decision, the referee's just going to wait and stumble around and wait for a little voice in his ear, and he'll make the right decision just to avoid that. I mean, that's exactly what happened in 2006 with Zidane, where afterwards FIFA said, no, there was no video evidence. The fourth referee saw it, and he alerted the referee, and it happened at the African Cup of Nations with Howard Webb. I think there was a penalty and a handball that was ultimately decisive, and I think exactly the same is going to happen. They're going to have video evidence. They're just going to tell anyone about it.
I think the offside rule needs to be sorted out more urgently than the video technology, because it's all over the place at the moment.
It certainly is. That, though, is all the Football Weekly we've got time for this decade. We'll be back on the 4th of January 2010, wearing jetpacks and spandex.
Living like the Jetsons, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I won't have a jetpack, I'll have a hoverboard.
Hopefully you'll be joining us too, listeners. And in the meantime, then, we wish you a very, very happy new year. I hope you close out the decade in the finest of style, and that the next one begins in the best possible fashion. And Tuesday, the 4th of January, we'll see you then. Bye for now.
Football Weekly Extra from The Guardian, in association with SportingBet.com.